Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf Zayin beMenachem Av, Tavshinayin Hey, Parashas Ra'eh. The evening of the third day, Tuesday, 11 August 2015, webcasting from the target of the anti-Jew in the Oval Office, whose animosity to the Jewish people and their one and only state has become the elephant in the room. Barack Hussein Obama, in the matter of Islam's war against the state of Israel, sides with the Muslims. And I make the case that this is what was foremost in his mind in 2008, running for office, when he spoke of making a fundamental change in America. This is it, its relationship to Jews in general and the state of Israel in particular. Iran has been open and honest of its desire to destroy Israel, God forbid. The current Muslim madman in charge there has just published a hefty tome called Palestine, which already communicates the principal statement of the book. Foremost in his tyrannical mind is the existence of a state of Israel. And in his book, he says this repeatedly. Palestine is the number one problem facing the world of Islam, and I submit that this sentiment is shared by the President of the United States of America. There are photographs of Obama smiling, grinning into the face of today's Sultan in Istanbul, Recep Erdogan, who likewise is a lunatic anti-Semite who hates Israel. Erdogan, remember, was Obama's primary counselor on the Middle East. This is a president who, as I pointed out in an American Thinker piece in February, slapped the Jewish people in the face within 10 minutes of being sworn in as president on the Capitol steps in January 2009. It's right there in his inaugural address, if you read between the lines. And then the next day, after he entered the Oval Office for the first time, his first phone call was to Mahmoud Abbas, the Arab assassin. And then his first appointment was George Mitchell. Remember him as special envoy tasked with solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as it is dishonestly misnamed. It's the Arab-Israeli conflict for real. Even more so, the Muslim-Jewish conflict. And now Obama has devised a plan to wire transfer an ungodly sum of money to the wicked mullahs in Tehran and see to it as well that they have atomic bombs in a few years, if not right away. Barack Hussein Obama is a fan of Islam. No one can gainsay that. After he himself has called the call to prayer from the minaret, one of the most beautiful sounds he's ever heard. He has functioned as a PR spin doctor for Islam, refusing ever to connect this culture with the thousands of murderers who murder people in its name. Jews are murdered in a kosher grocery store in Paris, and he refers to them as some folks, as if their Jewishness played no role in the massacre. There are massacres all over the place every day now, it seems, and the odds are great that the perpetrators and even the victims are Muslims. He cannot speak the idea of Islamic terrorism. He wants to give Iran billions of dollars, a country that has committed numerous outright acts of war against the United States, killing hundreds, even thousands of U.S. servicemen. Iran says it wants to annihilate Israel, and he signs off on an agreement giving them the atomic means to do that, God forbid. And still, the truth that he is in league with Iran because he is spiritually in tune with Islam and millions of other Muslims who want to see Israel obliterated, God forbid, cannot be spoken. Where is today's Emile Zola with his J'accuse, exposing the shameless evil anti-Semitism behind the frame-up of Captain Dreyfus in the 1890s? About the closest man today to Emile Zola, I think, is Mike Huckabee. And I hope that he and Chuck Schumer persuade senators who need to be persuaded that Obama, no matter what he says, is collaborating with the Iranians in their dreams of destroying Israel and for the same Islamic motives. Islam is incapable, versus Christianity, of living next door to Israel, living with Israel. Because Christians have, from a Jewish point of view, curiously been schlepping around for 2,000 years our Tanakh in translation, even as they say the Old Testament, as they misname it, no longer applies, they have been able, many of them, to accept the fulfillment of a promise made in the Old Testament thousands of years ago by the God of the Jews, which means he has not cast us aside. God's covenant with the Jews is indeed eternal, and I think a lot of Christians see that now. Many Christians, therefore, can even exult in bearing witness to this amazing event in human history, the return of the Jews, after thousands of years in exile. But not the Muslims. The existence of Israel shakes the foundations of Islam in a way it does not in Christianity. Israel's existence is experienced by Muslims as a rifle shot to the heart of Islam. Islam is the monotheism of thieves. There's nothing original in it. Every important concept is taken from the Jews. Islam was the successor religion to native polytheism and idol worship and nature worship. And as such, becoming monotheistic was not a new idea. They got it from the Jews. The idea of one God, of a chosen people, of a holy book, praying in the direction of a central temple city. The idea of the Messiah, or Mahdi in Arabic. Islam is largely the stealing of chunks of Judaism, and of course misunderstanding and twisting them. Stealing the Jews' holy book, they rewrote the story of Ishmael. They didn't like the Jewish version. And in the matter of God's commandment to the Jews to take over the land of Canaan and dispossess the Canaanites, the Muslims believe the commandment to Muhammad was to take over the whole world, to rid the world of non-believers and make it a one-world government, a one-world religion. Islam is the final revelation, they say. So Islam cannot tolerate the return of the Jews to Israel, to Jerusalem, to the Temple Mount. The very idea is such an atomic artillery shell fired into their brains. They can't deal with it. Rather, they deal with it barbarian style. They deny it. It was this denial that ended the Oslo peace process in July 2000, when Arafat told Clinton that the Jews never had a temple on Haram al-Sharif, the Temple Mount. I think finally the penny dropped in his mind, Clinton's mind, and the understanding arose that the whole 7 years of the Oslo delirium had been a lie. It surely dawned on Bill Clinton, as never before, that he was dealing with a lunatic with whom peace with Israel was impossible. And as my book shows, this was because Arafat was raised by the man who implanted the Muslim Brotherhood in Mandatory Palestine, his father. Arafat grew up as the prince of the Muslim Brotherhood in Palestine, the organizer's son. And he really didn't begin to call himself a Palestinian until he was in his 30s. And only then as a tactic. He had seen the success of the Muslims in Algeria in the 1950s in besting the French by talking the talk of a war of national liberation and of socialism as the future post-independence government. As my book shows, though, among themselves, the Muslims call themselves Muslims. And not Algerians. In Europe, they portray themselves as national freedom fighters, but among themselves and the masses of illiterates, for whom Islam is everything, they all were just Muslims. My book reminds us that for 40 years as well, following the Balfour Declaration and creation of Mandatory Palestine, the leader of the Arabs was a Muslim priest, just like the Ayatollahs in Tehran, whose vocabulary was exclusively Islamic and not Palestinian nationalist. And that was impossible, because he also insisted there was no such country as Palestine in that generation. And as Islam has been the fuel of the fire of hatred, all these years, as it was for Haj Amin in his generation. So, today, Islam remains a fire with the homicidal envy and hatred of Israel. And Obama is Islam's ally. Now, last spring in the negotiations, there was a shocking revelation around the table. It was reported Kerry and Sherman were allied with Iran, and making Iran's case to the others at that table, the P5 plus one. Islam's nuclear core burns with Ishmael's homicidal envy of Yitzhak and Yaakov, and his religion is nothing but the theft of ours. Islam believes Allah gave believers the right to overrun and loot the entire planet under the flag of an illiterate, uneducated Arab's misunderstanding of Judaic monotheism. And Obama is right there with them. His refusal to speak the idea of Islamic terrorism says much. His ugly refusal to fly to Paris to join other Western leaders after the Charlie Hebdo massacre and the Hypercacher pogrom. His refusal to acknowledge that the victims there were Jews. And now he wants to give the Iranians all that money and allow them to build atomic bombs. This man is a criminal anti-Semite. But on the national stage, who has the courage to say that?
אשת חיל נמצא ורחוק מפנינים נכרע בטח בלב בלה ושלל לא יחסר אשת חיל נמצא חייה דרשת צמר ופשתים ותעש בחפץ כפיה הייתה כאוניות סוחר ממרחק תביא לחמה אשת חיל נמצא ורחוק מפנינים נכרע בטח בלב וידיה שילחה לאביון לא תראה לביתה משלק כי כל ביתה לבושנים מרבדים עשתה לה שש וארגמן לבושה נודע בשערים בעלה בשבטו עם זקני ארץ אשת חיל ורחוק מפנינים נכרע בטח בלב בלה ושלל לא יחסר אשת חיל נמצא ורחוק מפנינים נכרע פתחה בחוכמה ותורת חסד על לשונה סופיה הליכות ביתה ולחם עצלות לא תאכל קמו בניה וישרוע בעלה ויהללה רבות בנות עשו חיל ואת עלית על כולנה
On the other hand, giving Obama the benefit of the doubt about what I see as his naked malevolence, maybe it's because he is so poorly educated, doesn't know how to think, has little knowledge and certainly no wisdom. On Sunday, in a radio interview on Low Life High Tone NPR, he said that Iran no doubt has to change. He said it, quote, must drop its anti-American and anti-Israel postures before it transitions into the international community. There has to be recognition that chanting death to America or denying the Holocaust among its leaders or threatening Israel with destruction, you know, providing arms to Hezbollah, which is on the terrorist list, that those things make Iran a pariah in the eyes of a large part of the world, close quote. This man's an idiot. He sees Iran, quote, transitioning into the international community when, as far as I know, Iran has no interest in being embraced by the international community. On the contrary, Iran wants to overrun the international community and does not give a rodent's derriere about being liked or accepted by said community. He speaks of these anti-American and anti-Israel slogans that have to be dropped as if they were public relations gimmicks that are just superficial and not really indicative of the real Iran underneath. Sounding like a spin doctor who runs political campaigns and does focus groups in order to see what's on people's minds, Obama thinks the Iranians can just drop these ideas of hating Israel and hating the United States. On NPR, he said, quote, and I can guarantee you that the moment the Iranian regime stopped engaging in that kind of rhetoric and that kind of behavior, that Iran would just by virtue of its size, talent, resources, immediately rise in its influence and its power in the eyes of the world, close quote. Dear me, such concern for the welfare of Iran here. Obama wants Iran to rise in influence and power in the world, and they can do that by just dropping these slogans like death to Israel and death to America. In other words, because they can drop these ideas, they really don't mean them. He also, as we've seen over the last few days, has been saying that the opposition to his plan in Washington is just partisan politics. He said the Republicans are opposed to everything he does, and the implication is that their opposition on this matter has nothing to do with the content and the merits and demerits of the deal. Like with Bibi, Obama does not refute his claims, his arguments, his facts. He indignantly objects to Bibi's manner, his rude interference in the conduct of American foreign affairs. He says he knows of no other foreign leader who has ever done such a thing. And never mind his own interference here during the last elections in order to topple Bibi. And never mind the related story today of Obama and Kerry's State Department playing advocate for the PLO Jew killers, as Obama and Kerry have sided with the Muslims in Iran. Yesterday, as predicted, the State Department went to court to lower the judgment against the PLO for murdering people with the claim that the PLO does not have that kind of money. And one asks, why not? One would think that after 21 years of state building by the Palestinian Authority, they would have this ancient cultured people, a flourishing economy, this historic, sophisticated nation who have contributed so much to humanity. That's how they talk in their national conventions. The truth is that the PA is another welfare scam in the same league with UNRWA. Abbas's worst nightmare is true independence with no foreign aid, for then he and his grafters would have to survive on their own, and they simply cannot do that. The money funneled to the PA for almost 22 years now, and not only goes to its bureaucrats, but there are also the employees of the hundreds of NGOs who are funded primarily by anti-Semitic European governments and peoples. This is what keeps the fantasy of a phantom Palestinian nation afloat. Without all the foreign aid, there would be no Palestinian community here. In this sense, although the main players are the Arabs themselves on the ground in Gaza and Judea and Samaria and the UNRWA areas in Jordan and Lebanon, the money supporting the PA is Western. Mahmoud Abbas, like his predecessor Arafat, is forever flying from one capital to another around the world to confer with government leaders and report on the status of the Palestinians' war of national independence to free themselves from the Zionist occupiers. And who do you think pays for all those trips? Jet fuel is expensive, as are the five-star accommodations suitable for the dignity of a head of state. entirety of the Palestinian cause is a monstrous pile of anti-Semitic lies, and also a business, a way of life, a way to make some money.
פעם כתבו בתמימות, פעם הכל היה פשוט. היום הכל מלא משמעות, מילים שנוגעות, מרמזות, שירה מודרנית, הכל מתוחכם. עזבו אתכם, שירו מהלב.
מה בקש ממך אלוקים בשמיים? מה בקש ובמן אבורך? כמו ילד קטן שישן וחולם לו בליל, כמו ילד קטן עד עובר למלאך.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. And here is another piece of evidence, supporting the thesis that Obama is even more than a communist like his mentor Franklin Marshall Davis. One reason he fundamentally trashed America's boycott of communist Cuba is also, above all, an anti-Semite out to harm the Jews. And that can be seen in the charges of dual loyalty subtly made regarding his fantasy Iran scheme. Jewish politicians are now being fingered with doubt about their loyalty to their leader, the President of the United States of America. Are you loyal to him or to your Jewish Prime Minister? Vote against the plan and you are a traitor, like Alfred Dreyfus. Obama is seeding the atmosphere with this poison. Netanyahu, perhaps clumsily, asked American Jews to do the right thing. And not surprisingly, there was pushback from the IBJs, the Inside the Beltway Jews, like Malcolm Honlein and Abe Foxman, huffing and puffing that their Americans will make their decisions as Americans. And the Prime Minister of Israel was out of line making that request. How frightened they are of being accused of dual loyalty, which underneath really means suspected of disloyalty, of being traitors. Unfortunately, the largely post-religious IBJ leaders here do not know how to answer this charge. For that might lead to the truth that the true traitor to America and its traditions is Barack Hussein Obama. His Iran scheme is one major example of his desire to change America fundamentally. The IBJ leadership could and should strike back and accuse Obama of not being faithful to America and its traditions. By voting as Israel wants, American senators and congressmen will truly be faithful with American traditions. If anyone is being disloyal around here, it's Barack Hussein. Obama has spoken out against the lies being told by the opposition to his plan. An anonymous White House source told the Idiots Woman in Washington that the administration will not stand for the spreading of lies about the plan, and those who do not support it will meet with a powerful response, i.e., any Democrat senator who votes with the Jews. But as usual, it's Obama and his team who are lying. He's always lying. He tells you what you want to hear, but it is his actions, not his words, that one must observe. As in his NPR interview, yes, he's aware of Iran's anti-Semitism, and of course wants them to stop it, but he does nothing about it. If he truly wants Iran to drop its anti-Semitism and transition into the family of nations, he should apply even more sanctions than the ones he removed. What does it matter what this Tori Nixkrita artist says when his actions reflect other intentions? It's going to be a truly dramatic climax, I fear, the vote in September. Assuming all 54 Republican senators vote against Obama and his evil scheme, that means another 13 Democratic senators, of the 45 of them, must basically heroically go against their party's leader. Which is why last webcast I said I hope that Chuck Schumer will work on them and insist that this Iran madness is larger by many magnitudes of party loyalty. 10 of the 45 Democratic senators are nominally Jewish, but of course all but one of them do not lead Jewish lives. Ben Cardin of Maryland, I believe, is modern Orthodox. California Senator Barbara Boxer, originally a textbook liberal feminist of her generation and out of Brooklyn, has already made clear her loyalty to her party and her American identity. She will not side with the Jewish people in Israel in our hour of need. Senator Bernie Sanders is likewise an old post-Jewish socialist from Brooklyn, and today we learned that young Brian Schatz of Hawaii, married to an Oriental lady, pledged his loyalty to his leader, Barack Hussein Obama. What Obama is doing is pitting Jew against Jew and asking them to be loyal to their president and not to some foreign prime minister. And this is what Napoleon said to the Jews in 1807. I will make you full-fledged citizens of enlightened France, but you must denationalize. You must cut yourself off from Jews elsewhere in the world. They are not your nation. France is your nation. And now, thanks to Obama, Jews in America have some soul searching to do.
לכל דבר בעולם יש קצב משלו, לכל דבר יש קצב בתוכו. ריבון העולמים, אתה הקצב של החיים, אתה עושה כל דבר בעיתו. יש קצב שבו צומחות השיניים, וקצב שניפלו יום אחד. יש קצב שבו נפתחים השמיים, וחשבת שאתה לבד. יש קצב שבו קופצים למים, וקצב שבו מתייבשים. יש קצב שבו מרימים ידיים אל השמיים ומבקשים. ויש לפעמים ומחכים. יש קצב בו בתשובה, יש קצב בו מכירים, נפרדים ושוב נפגשים. מחפשים שמות לילדים. לכל דבר בעולם יש קצב משלו, לכל דבר יש קצב בתוכו. בוא נעולמים, אתה הקצב של החיים, אתה עושה כל דבר בעיתו. יש קצב שבו יצאנו אל הדרך, וקצב שבו חזרנו עייפים. חיפשנו את הסוד, את המשל בחיים, מצאנו את הדברים הפשוטים. יש קצב שבו יצאנו לגלות, יש קצב בו אנו חוזרים. יש לי דמעות, אני חושב, חזרנו אחד מעיר, שניים מכפר, על חמורים בלילה בין הערים. קצב בו נשקתי את הספר, את ידיו של הזקן החכם. את בני וכיסיתי בשמיכה שיהיה לו חם, הוא קורא לך שוב אבל נרדם. לכל דבר בעולם יש קצב משלו, לכל דבר יש קצב בתוכו. ריבון העולמים, אתה הקצב של החיים, אתה עושה כל דבר בעיתו. אתה עושה כל דבר בעיתו.
The last item of which is not about Israel and Jews, but the worrying state of the great friend of the Jews, the state of the states, United States, in this most corrupt and decadent of generations in memory. The New York Times reported today on the fashion spreading in the Democratic Party to dissociate itself from the political heritage of Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson. For nearly a century, state party organizations have held annual Jefferson-Jackson Day dinners. But now the fashion is casting them off because they were slaveholders. And today, Democrats are most concerned with an issue about which they had nothing to say: the plight of sodomites and their exclusion from mainstream American life. And I say, when Americans jettison the legacy of Mr. Jefferson, as he was called, and Andy Jackson, they're cutting themselves off from the source of American culture. It's another example, I'm afraid, of decay, of decadence. And that's sad. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday. Quiet day here in Israel. Thank God. Be back on Thursday, God willing. Until then, Laila Tov, Menetz Yisrael.